All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NFL podcast for Tuesday, November 7th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James
Davis. Say your last name, buddy. Even though you can't Google it because it's so popular anyway. It'll just come up with 10,000 other James Davises before you get to
like mostly it's that running back who's on Clemson. He's been the leader in the James Davis clubhouse pretty recently, but I've still got a lot of legs under me. He's kind of a one-hit wonder. I don't see him doing a lot of stuff in his 30s and 40s, you know?
I feel like there was like a mayor of Cincinnati or something like that too that had a James
Davis. There was like a congressman that was shot. Well, and then obviously the one James Davis to rule them all is actually Jim Davis, the author of Garfield. So we're pretty all the rest of us are pretty unlikely to catch him. But again, I've got a lot more mileage left in this tank, Doug. We'll see.
You're going to get there. You're going to be on the internet for a while. All right. So we're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Head over to the site, free 3-day trial of our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. That's optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, NFL, NBA as well. The reason I had the wrong emphasis on NFL was because we also recorded an NBA podcast and I was just getting my brain straight about which one we were about to start talking about, and it's NFL. So go over and check out all that stuff. DFSR.com will get you started on anything you need for daily fantasy. All right, so we're going to talk about week 9 in the NFL that just recapped. And I hate to like, well, I'm not an NFL apologist by any means, because I think the product is, this is an interesting week about sort of like where you stand, or maybe like a referendum on the product the NFL is throwing out there, because about half the games were just complete and utter blowouts. Some were over from basically the time the first whistle blew, like the Rams game, the Rams Giants game. That one was never in doubt after the first possession. Some took about, you know, a quarter to get there, but almost too many of these games, I would say, were over to the point where you couldn't even turn them on. Like if you were at the bar, or I was like, you know, I was watching on the Red Zone channel, they just kind of didn't even know where to go with a game, because it was like, There was one game in the 1 o'clock hour that was still kind of close. You know, Carolina, Atlanta stayed a little bit close, and then Baltimore, Tennessee, which again, the game's close, but kind of who cares? I mean, do you think, I feel like we've been saying this more this year than any other year, that the product, it's not that it's unwatchable because it's still an entertaining sport, but we're moving to this place that there's a complete list of haves and have nots. And there's also kind of like this weird parity where bad teams blow out other bad teams. I mean, give me like your bird's eye view of where you see the NFL standing right now, because I was really nonplussed by this past week. And just from a watching kind of entertainment standpoint.
Well, the two things I think that really keep the NFL afloat just into product wise are, first of all, the fact that you can just switch from any game now, whether people are watching in bars or home, or they have to, like, if you really are a fan of the NFL, you're watching on DirecTV where you can get, you know, any game at any time. You're watching the Red Zone channel, you know, all of these things make NFL Sundays infinitely more watchable. Like when I was growing up, and I was lucky because I was in a crossover in two markets, so I actually had two CBSs, so I could watch either the Eagles or the Jets games, right? And like if there was a national game at the same time, maybe I could watch that too. But those days, like no one would just sit down, no one in their right mind anyway in 2017 would just sit down and just watch like the Eagles blow out Denver, you know, like that would never happen these days. And so thankfully people can switch from game to game and go check something else out. But yeah, the combination of, you know, just all of the, it's kind of getting, I mean, we talked about this with Ezekiel Elliott stuff beforehand, but you know, the outside the game pall that's cast on the NFL right now is as bad as it's ever been, at least in my lifetime. Maybe there was worse like in the 70s and 80s with steroids and cocaine and stuff like that. But that's really, really bad. The product itself is bad. And this for me this week too, like just the offensive, well, I was going to say the other thing is fantasy, but daily fantasy and season long, and even the fantasy product, both season long and daily this week, left something to be desired in terms of like actual exciting things happening, big performances and so on. So yeah, I think it's struggling for sure. I mean, if you put it up against basketball, for my money, entertainment wise, basketball certainly has the lead in the clubhouse. I know that, you know, a lot of people just kind of were off basketball for quite a long time. DFS has kind of revived it for some on some level, but I could see the NFL not being the biggest sport in the U.S. at some point in the next 5 years.
Well, DFS has revived basketball in a major way, I would say. I don't think it's even a small way. I think that the amount of engagement on basketball is not directly one-to-one correlated, because you have a lot of stars too. That helps also. Like you have a lot of very high profile name stars in the NBA that you actually really just don't in the NFL. Now, the NFL has always kind of struggled with this idea, is that there's, you know, there's Peyton Manning, and then there was like, you know, 500 other guys that played football, and that was sort of how the NFL seemed to treat a lot of its stars. I guess Aaron Rodgers kind of fit in that too. Mm-hmm. But it's not necessarily a star-driven league. Anyway, we could probably talk, this is more of like a macro view about the thing. We could talk about some of the performances this week, some of the injuries, some of the things that we can take a look at going into week 10. because there are some things that did stand out to me that I think are probably going to matter going forward. There are a couple injuries and suspensions we can get into. And there was just a couple big performances. Let's start with a couple of the injuries that came out this week. Jameis Winston got hurt. I think it was he re-injured his throwing shoulder, his banged up shoulder. He got suspended and then, he got hurt and then Mike Evans is suspended. So Tampa Bay is going into this week with a combination sort of like Ryan Fitzpatrick, Deshaun Jackson, Doug Martin, and that seems to be kind of that seems to be like who they're kind of throwing out there. What do we do with this team? I mean, they're playing the Jets this week? Do we just start targeting the Jets defense? You think with just their play? It seems like they're playing with almost their complete second team at this point.
Yeah, I think you can drag them over into your recycling bin. You see the little garbage appear, and then you can press empty recycling bin. That's probably what I would do. I think that, just from top to bottom, this team is totally unattractive. They were already sort of bad. Like, I already didn't really – I kind of wanted to skip over their team, and they lost the only two relevant offensive players they have. If they had a better running back, maybe you could consider that, but they don't. If they had a possession receiver that would now become cheap because of a new quarterback, you could play him, but they don't. So, just from top to bottom, this is a total wasteland of a DFS team. Again, aside from, as you pointed out, just taking the opposing defense.
So a couple other pieces of news here. Jeremy Curley has been suspended for PED use. I was saying that people still use PEDs, still think they're going to get away with it. I mean, there's probably way more that do it than actually get caught doing it. But he does get suspended. The Jets passing game at times has been sort of interesting with guys like Robbie Anderson. I guess you could see Jermaine Kearse. The Jets really just actually haven't been as bad as people have thought they were going to be. I don't know if this is the referendum on the NFL that you just can't really figure out. It's very hard preseason wise to figure out who the actual good teams are and who aren't. I mean, Jets do have 4 wins, and their point differential is pretty much right. I mean, only minus 16. So it's not like they've been.
They're just average. They're nothing special. But I mean, it's crazy. Like, think about in the AFC right now, Cleveland's 0-8. So they're a true abomination. The next lowest team has 3 wins. I mean, that's the parity people have been fantasizing about every year. In the NFC, there's a little bit more of the haves and the have-nots with terrible teams like the Giants, San Francisco, and Tampa Bay. Well, especially Tampa Bay now. Tampa Bay was already 2-6, by the way, even with their number one wide receiver and quarterback. So good luck to them. Almost a guaranteed, close out the season losing every single game. So, it's a weird position for the NFL when the team like the Jets, who, again, have one of the least exciting offenses in football and, not an especially noteworthy defense either. I mean, they've allowed 207 points so far this year, which is sixth in the AFC in points allowed, but just they're enough mediocre to bad teams that they squeeze out some wins.
A couple other injury notes here. George Kittle and Trent Taylor both hurt for San Francisco. Usually I wouldn't care, except that there have been a couple of wide receivers that have done okay, like Aldrick Robinson, Marquise Goodwin have looked okay at times. Carlos Hyde got a ton of targets this week. This is one of those situations where I'm not going to like overblow the fact that usually we wouldn't talk about this, but San Francisco is always losing and always having to pass, and there is a little bit of value if you think there's going to be some targets on their end. After that, I think that's pretty much all the injury news and notes. And the last one, obviously, is the one you mentioned before, is Ezekiel Elliott. He'll be back in court again this Thursday to decide his fate about whether he's going to play. So he got the last second injunction, I guess you would call it, on whether he could play or not, and that seems like it's going to go on. Now, I don't know what the math is going to be on this about whether or not at some point Dallas just kind of calls the ball and says, one, I don't know if the suspension applies to the playoffs. Like, I don't know exactly how that works if they were to, well, they're going to get there, but I don't know if at some point they just say, we can't really keep risking this because we don't want him to miss the playoffs. Do you think we're destined for like you probably don't even know, because who even knows, can't even figure this out, but this Ezekiel Elliott, will he or won't he thing has been one of the more frustrating things to try to figure out on a week to week basis.
Yeah. I mean, it has, and it hasn't. Like, when he does play, he's a great play. He's the number one most safe running back probably right now in terms of overall opportunity and performance between him and Le'Veon Bell anyway. And I think you keep an eye on it. Really, it's when that shoe drops and he does miss a week that I think things will get rattled up. But so far, it hasn't really changed too much about how we've actually approached our preparation, other than we've done a lot of needless preparation trying to envision scenarios where he wasn't going to play. But there's a lot of just kind of weird little uncertain things hanging out there. Not the usual kind. Sometimes there's injury stuff, relevant guys that are going to go down, they're going to create opportunity. The one big shakeup we did have leading into lock this week was the Leonard Fournette news, of course, with him being game time decision, ultimately being scratched. Chris Ivory getting the nod. People were trying to figure out what to do between him and TJ Yeldon, since Yeldon had the bigger performance, but Ivory had the greater number of carries the last time that Fournette had missed. We actually wound up rolling out Ivory. We weren't over the moon about it, but I think we ultimately landed on the fact that, you know, we figured he would get something like 17 to 18 carries. He actually wound up touching 20 carries and being involved in the passing game as well, which is a pretty welcome sign. So I don't know how that's going to impact things going forward, but when he's still very, very cheap coming into this next week, and the fact that he got 23 touches on a $5,300 salary means that if for whatever reason, I think people are expecting Fournette to play right now, but if for whatever reason Fournette doesn't play, I think you can probably go back to the Ivory well there.
Yeah, I didn't want to play. I mean, well, I think Fournette's going to play, violation of team rules. So I guess he missed a meeting or something like that beforehand. I really didn't want to play Ivory. I felt like it just was the wrong kind of situation. One thing is that we sometimes get caught in this weird situation of whether you how bad a guy is compared to how good the opportunity is, right? Like, so Ivory struck me as just a bad. He's not a good running back, and he's also was facing a very good run defense in Cincinnati. But like you said, the opportunity was going to be there. That Yeldon had cut into his carries a little bit in an example we had from earlier in the season had me a little nonplussed, especially because later in the game they were willing to go more with Yeldon than they were with Ivory. It just had me. I ended up doing it, so I wasn't. I ended up making the decision, but it just really was one of those situations that struck me as just not great. Like, and that was where our debate was Sunday morning, was that, you know, how much does the opportunity outweigh just the fact that there's a reason this guy's like basically a career backup running back and was, you know, almost out, or was like basically even snapped the last time in this situation. So ultimately, we ended up getting there on him, but I just was, these backup running back situations are very dicey to try to figure out, because a lot of times teams that struggle to find a running back or to have a set running back, the reason is because their run game just in general is bad. And like, it kind of, and if you take a guy who's mediocre, then you just like, you know, take Eddie Lacy in Seattle, right? Like, he's going to supposed to get all the carries. He's very cheap, but the, you know, like, how much can you really factor in the fact that he's also just bad? So anyway, there's a long-winded way to say that I didn't really want to play Ivory, and I'm glad that I did, but that was my hesitation.
Yeah, no, I know you were pretty hesitant, Doug, but thankfully you have the eye here, James the Eye Davis, to guide you back onto the right track, because, whew, was that a close one, buddy. That was a close one. You're welcome.
Well, the other thing too was, I mean, we can get into some of these performances, that the reason it actually ended up not being almost a huge deal is because the running back performances this week were just awful. I mean, across the board, basically everyone was bad.
Yeah, it was really something. I mean, I was looking at this just for our show prep today, and Peterson, the only 100-yard running back on the week. The next guy is 93, and then after that, it's Matt Forte. It's 77 yards. Like, these are just not numbers you see. I mean, it's really nuts.
Well, what happened was, I mean, there were so many blowouts, right, that a lot of teams that maybe did have guys in line to probably get there just sat their guys in the fourth quarter, right? Like, so, like, Mark Ingram sits in the fourth quarter pretty much because they don't need to play him. Actually, I take that back. A lot of these guys, some of these guys weren't even close. Actually, really, no one else was. Gurley pretty much sat most of the fourth quarter because he, like, they were just completely crushing. Yeah, but I mean, after that, the running back performances here were really something. Peterson, it's gonna be interesting to see what Peterson's ownership is going into this week. They get I can't remember who their matchup was. I thought it was someone good. They get to play Seattle. He seems like a guy that just, I don't know, when you're old and you carry the ball 37 times in one game, it just feels like the next game is just gonna be, I don't know, it's a Thursday night game also, so the rest time for him is 3 days less.
Yeah, I mean, I think we ignore it generally because it's Thursday, but I think if you're playing that Thursday slate, there's a case to be made, because this wasn't without context. Their coach did come out and say that they were going to lean on Peterson more heavily this week. So I think that there is some reason that this happened, and or at least that it was intentional. It wasn't like a random game script related thing. So I actually think he's legit going forward.
Yeah, I don't. I think he's too old. I get that it took him.
I think you're too old. How about that? I think you should say that to his face and see how that goes.
It wouldn't go well. No, I just think that, like, you know, I just have a feeling that these recovery times, 37 carries is no joke. Thankfully, the matchup's kind of bad and they're underdogs, so I don't think it's going to be a huge deal. Maybe he just gets fewer carries this week and then he gets 10 days off, and that probably helps him a little bit. But honestly, if it was like a neutral matchup going into this week with Peterson, I would strongly consider not playing him, because I just do think that there's I just feel like this game was sort of an outlier for him. I'm not basing that off a ton of stuff. It was also like the best matchup they could have. San Francisco is complete garbage. So
he also has another good game on his track record since moving to Arizona too. So I don't think it's totally random. I think there's reason to like Peterson here. We're not going to play him this week probably against Seattle, but I don't think he should be off people's radars.
Otherwise, you know, running back carries were generally kind of split up here. Only four guys total carried the ball more than 20 times. I know we were without Le'Veon Bell, and then obviously Fournette was suspended, so that takes two of the real big guys just off the table right away. Other notable performances here at running back. Wondering your thoughts on Christian McCaffrey. So McCaffrey this week, you know, they trade Kelvin Benjamin, so the team's looking a little bit different. But this was the first week where he completely outsnapped Jonathan Stewart. That has not been the case so far. Jonathan Stewart they've been basically in a timeshare, and I believe Stewart was still outsnapping him even on games where McCaffrey looked pretty good. But this week, McCaffrey had 53 snaps to Stewart's 21. He was okay. 15 carries for 66 yards is really not all that good. He did catch the ball. The targets were still there. What do you make of this McCaffrey performance? Do you think this is a changing of the guard for Carolina here, that this is going to be something that continues for them, where they just you have to figure their intention all along, obviously, was to get him more carries as the season went on, if he warranted any of it, just because he was a high first round draft pick and much ballyhooed and all that other stuff. But, you know, where do we set McCaffrey's usage going forward? Because this game looks pretty good, and I'm still a little bit scared because it's only a one game kind of sample.
Yeah, I'm excited about McCaffrey, I think. I mean, I think the fact that he had 15 carries, which was as many as he had had in the three prior weeks combined, he lost a few targets, but not too bad. I think that they are kind of looking to lean on him here. Obviously, it's still everything is buoyed by the fact that he scored a touchdown, but he's kind of just a guy who can score touchdowns. Now, I don't think he's going to be the goal line back almost no matter what happens, but he does punch touchdowns in the receiving game. And he's like the guy who's going to get the ball if they're on the 6-yard line. Right. So even if he's not going to get it on the one, I think he's still a guy that is a threat to score touchdowns. I'm interested. I think especially on DraftKings where you're getting the point per reception, he's very, very interesting. And just the fact that he's going to actually be a running back and not just kind of a poor man's, you know, slot possession receiver, I think makes him kind of an interesting dual threat. So, yeah, I'm actually into McCaffrey. I'm definitely going to be considering playing him this week.
Yep, and I was just looking at the schedule here. They're the Monday night game, so that's not going to be on either of the main slates. And the line is set for Carolina -9 going in, which is right around. That's exactly what we want to see out of running backs in terms of Vegas lines. High home favorite, and he kind of checks that box. So I think he'll definitely be like 100% on those smaller slates. And honestly, too, he's not a reason in and among himself, but the Thursday game does include them. If you play the Thursday slate, it includes the Monday night slate too. So I think he ends up probably being in some of those lineups as well, if you choose to just roll out some of those Thursday games. Other than that, the running back, like I said, the running back performances just really weren't there completely. You mentioned no one over 100 yards. A lot of these other games, there's really almost nothing noteworthy about them. Some interesting receiving games, though, that I want to kind of look into. So one guy, T.Y. Hilton, was a pretty huge chalk play going in on DraftKings, and it made sense. He was really cheap. He was only like in the high 4,000s, I think. He was like 4,900 on DraftKings. He had a huge game. This is like, I mean, would you call this the quintessential T.Y. Hilton game? Like, if you look at his game logs.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just look up and down his game log, Doug. Let me just read off these totals. 32, 25, 37, 24, 21. I mean, he's just kind of doing, oh, wait a second. Oh, damn it. I didn't see the decimal places here. It's actually 32, 2.5, 3.7, 2.4, 21. Like, what on earth is going on with this guy? Like, he's actually been the poster child for the inconsistent up and down receiver over the last, since we've been doing this effectively. It seems like I've known this guy as long as I've known my oldest son. But I can't believe it. I don't even know if it was on a podcast or if it was just when we were trying to get things prepped before Sunday before lock. But as we were looking at that, I was going, you were like, he's really cheap on DraftKings, but he's been really bad. And then we had a good laugh about how he had two games that were both like as many points as his other games combined. And then he goes out and just has his best game of the season. So F you, T.Y. Hilton, if you're listening, I can't figure you out, my friend. And you've cost me a lot of money on more than one occasion.
Last season, he was the most volatile wide receiver that there was by a long shot. Like if you look at coefficient variation, which is standard deviation and combined with average, it kind of gives you a sense of like, you know, where kind of volatility stands on certain guys. And you can get in a sense of, and with football, it's kind of hard sometimes because sometimes the sample sizes are small, but he had an entire season last year where this is just the case. And now, he's piggybacking that by adding into this season. So if you look at his CV compared to other guys in his average fantasy points per game, so the other guys in his range are other name guys, like, well, that's just funny. Julio Jones and they are about tied with average points per game on DraftKings this year. But Golden Tate, Chris Hogan, Michael Thomas, Brandon Cooks, Jarvis Landry, these guys are all run into the same or all are grouped in the same average points per game, except that their coefficient of variations are right in like the 0.4, 0.5 range, which is right. Well, this is right where you see with pretty good wide receivers. So that 0.4, 0.5, you know, it's more volatile than running backs, but it's still pretty good. Hilton's, it's double, 0.93. That's like, it's insane. It's actually just insane that been on the field enough to like have this many points and have this coefficient of variation. It's like, it's almost impossible to get this, right? Like, unless you are the ultimate peak and valley wide receiver, which he is, right? Like, he just takes multiple weeks off. And then the three other weeks that he actually plays and does something well, it's like the best game of the year and you needed it. I can't, there has to be some luck in that. Or bad luck and whatever going both ways. But I mean, what do you even make of this? Like, his price is going to come up again. To me, you simply cannot trust this guy at all. We have too long of a sample size where it just doesn't work out for you way more than it does work out for you.
Well, and especially with the bad quarterback. Like, I don't know how you can expect anything with the quarterback situation as it is there. I think when luck comes back, that would be pretty interesting. But right now, no, don't trust the guy at all.
Well, that's not till next season because he's out for the season now. So, like,
when luck comes back in the future at some point, consider him. As of now, the quarterback play is too erratic. And he's like the combination of both of those things, his routes, his ball catching ability, and his quarterback play lead me to believe that we have a lot more 2-point performances coming than we do 32-point performances.
And, you know, and not to say that, you know, there's luck involved in every single football game and there's all these little games of inches and whatever that can really swing more than any other sport will really swing.
I know what you're going to talk about here.
But his second touchdown was like the luckiest thing of all time, right? Like, if you watch you had to have seen the replay, but if you watch that game, or if you didn't watch the game, he catches the ball, jumps over the defender. Defender somehow doesn't touch his foot, lays there. Grimes comes jogging by him, for some reason doesn't lay a hand on him. Everyone just stops, no whistle blows, and he just runs the next 30 yards for the touchdown. So, I mean, that's a 9-point just complete luck play. Right now, again, like, these things happen all the time in football, and you don't want to just go back and try to check the box. And every single time a hugely lucky thing happens for or against you, because it's what makes football kind of fun and also maddening at the same time. But you could, I would say, pretty comfortably wipe 9 points off of his final total with that play, just because you're just not going to see that kind of thing anyway. Anyway, I have no trust in T.Y. Hilton. I kind of hope that people keep playing him, because, again, I think that you are going to be behind it more than in front of it with him. And we just have a long enough track record to see that. Other games that stand out here, DeAndre Hopkins leads the week in targets with 16. Turns it into 6 for 86 and a touchdown with Savage. This is one of those ones where, from a projection system standpoint, I'm wondering your thoughts here. Like, what we do with a guy like Hopkins? Because if you give him in his current like 2017 stats, if you gave him something like 12 targets a game, he would be a play all over the place. And yet that you can't. These targets are all different now because these are not Deshaun Watson targets. They're Tom Savage targets. What do we do with a guy like Hopkins? Is the volume just going to be there like enough that we can just continue playing him at his prices? Or do you think that even like the 6 for 86 and a touchdown was kind of lucky considering who's throwing him the ball? Like, I'm really confused about what to make of Hopkins.
Well, I think we have two games sort of in this world right now. We have his first game of the season and the most recent game of the season. And I think that's a pretty reasonable proxy for what we can expect, which is a ton of targets. Not going to convert a lot of those, but he's still a very talented receiver. So I actually think, I mean, obviously you're not going to be as enthusiastic about him as you were when Deshaun Watson was under center. But I think overall, Hopkins, he's now 7,600 down from 9,100. That seems like a fairly reasonable price for him. So I think he remains in the cash game conversation, understanding that you're getting more of like T.Y. Hilton than you are of Hopkins with Watson, you know. So you're not going to be over the moon, I don't think, on these prices, but I think you can't just discard him, because anyone who's going to lead the NFL in targets, which we have all evidence is that he will now, right? I mean, 16 targets in the two games now with Savage. And again, not a whole lot of production on those prices, but he does it around those, that number of targets, but he doesn't need that much production. Like, if he converts 40% of his targets on 16 targets, that's still a lot of production. So touchdown in each of those games too, incidentally. He's obviously their red zone target because he's their target on every passing down. I think I kind of like Hopkins, to be honest, on this price. I, you know, understanding that I'm going to get burned some weeks, but it raises the floor a whole heck of a lot to lead the NFL in targets.
Houston is a huge underdog going into the face of the Rams this week. They're plus 11.5 going in. So, I mean, but based on that, it stands to reason that they're going to have to just throw.
Keep your passing hands warm, boys. That's what I say.
Anything else that stood out to you this week? I kind of threw out some of the things that were most of them were pretty obvious, like the McCaffrey out snapping thing and then some of these wide receiver performances as well. But anything else stand out to you from week 9 in the NFL?
Yeah, so I'm going to move over to wide receivers a little bit. I talked about how erratic running back was this week. We were missing some of our safest guys. Obviously, we were missing Fournette. We were missing Le'Veon Bell. Gurley had the extenuating circumstance. I still think there are some running backs that bring a marginal degree of safety, but just understand what you're paying for there. I think, the Kareem Hunt was a guy we talked about before lock, not because we were going to play him, but mostly because we were excited that other people were going to play him. And sure enough, people went out there and some 10 to 15%, depending on which cash games you played on FanDuel, people went there with Kareem Hunt. This is not the year to just try to get safety from outside of the elite tier of running backs. And Kareem Hunt seemed to be that for the first three games. Since then, he has not been that. It doesn't matter the matchup. It doesn't really matter any of the other extenuating circumstances. Kareem Hunt is just a guy. He's probably a $7,800 running back rather than a $9,000 running back. So don't continue to pay for past production, I guess is my point, because we made a bet who would have higher ownership, Ivory or Hunt. Ivory edged him out there. Ivory outperformed the guy just in terms of fantasy points. And I think that's the point. Like, we want to keep our eye on who are the running back values, like, and can we pair a running back value guy with one of the running back consistent guys? There's a whole sea of guys still that we want to ignore completely because they're too expensive for what they actually bring to the table. Then there's wide receiver. I think wide receiver actually continues to be pretty interesting as well, because I don't want to say we've played the same guys every single week, but we're striking up a theme right now, which is that there are guys in that 6,000 to 7,200-ish price range on FanDuel that we're going back to week after week. And actually, sometimes that cast of characters changes, but the idea remains the same, that they're slightly undervalued receivers or under-costed receivers relative to their value that we can go to. So Jarvis Landry, he wasn't great in terms of actual targets and balls caught and that kind of thing, but he's such a big part of the Miami offense that him punching in a touchdown now is no surprise. Like, he's just getting targets down low. And Cutler actually looking more efficient, I think, only helps Landry going forward. But one guy I was really, there were kind of a lot of kind of random performances this week at wide receiver, just like there always are. Your Terrence Joneses, Detroit sustaining two of the 500-yard receivers. But I'm curious to know what you think of, well, two guys. The first one is Doug Baldwin. What do you make of his 108-yard? Like, so we saw Richardson and Lockett go off last week. Baldwin comes back. He has 108 yards and a touchdown. Is he remotely safe now on, and I get that it's a Thursday game, but just for projecting forward, is he a pretty safe bet for you at 7,500?
Oh, completely. I loved him going this week. I actually liked him even more because I knew people would be more in love. And I think I mentioned this in the game, but game breakdown that I thought people would be more on the Lockett Richardson thing because of the touchdowns. And that's the problem with fantasy, right? Is that touchdowns are so important that you can't ignore them at all. And you can also kind of ignore them at times. Like, I think that the Lockett Richardson as compared to Baldwin thing from the week before. Yes, I believe Baldwin is very much in that upper tier group of just targets at this point.
I think he's the guy in Seattle. Like, I think we saw them go right back to it. Sure, they saw something a couple of weeks ago, but Lockett and Richardson were both terrible. And Paul Richardson in particular had three targets this week. So I think if there's like a shutdown corner on Baldwin that's going to offer shadow coverage or something like that, maybe that's the time to waver off him. But I think he's just kind of good.
No, I do too. And this probably isn't the matchup with Peterson, although I'm not sure Peterson will completely shadow him. But if you look at other guys and his targets per game range this season, that I would, and I'm going to take all just these as neutral matchups, right? Like, let's just say matchup independent. Other guys that I would trust more than him, I would trust him more than Alshon Jeffrey. I would trust him more than Mike Evans, definitely going forward now with no Jameis. Definitely more than Larry Fitzgerald because of the quarterback situation there. Probably more than Dez, just because of the conversion. Doug Baldwin's conversions are so much better than Dez's. So Dez has a 51% conversion rate. Baldwin has a 67% conversion rate. That 67% is elite. Is completely elite. And if they're still going to struggle to run, which that does not seem like it's going to change anytime soon. They just can't run the ball at all. Guys like this become even more valuable because they become the de facto running game. That we saw that last week with them. Lacy can't do anything. Rawls can't do anything. They're playing from behind. And the targets get there and he gets there. And so, yeah, and I think that he's clearly the wide receiver one I really like. I liked Baldwin going into this week, and I continue like, who is the other guy you want to know about?
Marquise Lee. He's a guy that's system keyed in a little bit. I was looking at Marquise Lee's game log recently, and there seems to be some evidence that he's turning into like, and he's just in that right price range. He's in the $6,000 price range, goes into Cincinnati, 12 targets, 8 catches, 75 yards and a touch. One of the better receiving performances from a fantasy perspective on the whole weekend. And now we have 2 weeks in his last three where he has double digit targets. Do you think Lee is a guy that's kind of, because Jacksonville's always wanted this, right? Like, I mean, they kind of had this in Allen Robinson. Hearns has never developed into this guy that can just catch balls, move the chains, you know, punch in the last 7 yards for a touchdown, whatever. Do you think Marquise Lee is rounding into a guy who's, you know, the next kind of value guy our system's going to pick up on that should be more like 6,600, but we play him because he's 6,000?
Obviously the quarterback play stinks. And I really helped him to not have Fournette there because they couldn't keep it on the ground as much as they want. They still ran the ball a ton. But I think
they ran the ball a ton, dude. They had 31 carries in this game.
Yeah, no, I still feel like that probably helped Lee. And again, I like them. I like them going into this week too. I always get a little scared because I really hate rostering wide receivers where I just know the quarterback stinks, right? Like it's just so many ways it can go bad. And with a team that like wants to run the ball more, well, because their quarterback stinks. So Jacksonville's in this weird place where their defense is good enough. And I mean, generally speaking, their running back is great. So they're in a spot where they just rarely need to throw the ball. And that's just a weird spot because it's weird to have a good running back and a great defense and then just a really bad quarterback in your team. So that's my only thing. That's like the only part where I'm a little bit hesitant on a guy like Lee. And I still do think that he's clearly is working his way into one of those possession guys. One guy actually that's going to be an interesting play this week is just in terms of talking about cheap receivers. I did see some targets. Sterling Shepard had 9 targets, and he gets to play San Francisco this week, and he's only 5,700 on FanDuel. Do you think that it was his first game back, so we looked at him and Ingram as clearly being the two guys I think we thought were going to get the targets here for the Giants. Do you think Shepard continues to stay in that maybe close to double-digit target range for, again, also a team that really struggles to run the ball? I mean, it's going to be hard to imagine them playing from big time behind against San Francisco, but the matchup's so good. Do you think 5,700 just as a kind of first look, is that too low for a guy like Shepard?
I think so, for sure. You know, the fact that he came in with the 9 targets, turned into 5 receptions for 70 yards, that's just underwhelming a performance enough that people will kind of ignore it. But that's the kind of performance that could easily turn into 7 catches for 95 yards or, you know, 5 catches for 73 yards and a touchdown. You know, that's like the kind of just before breakout performance that I think we're looking for. You know, it's actually not too dissimilar on a rate basis from Marquise Lee's performance, except for the fact that Lee punched in the touchdown and Shepard didn't. So yeah, I like Shepard going forward. I think he's undercosted and he's definitely in that little mix, Doug, in our toolkit of cheap wide receivers we can plug in to pay up for safety elsewhere.
Any other performances stand out to you before we get out of here?
No, you know, it was, I guess a little bit keeping my eye on Alshon Jeffrey. The fact that he was able to go in there and do that to Denver's secondary is pretty noteworthy. You know, he had been kind of silent for most of the season. If he's actually kind of had a rapport now with Wentz, drawing 11 targets, turning into 6 catches for 84 yards, and of course, more importantly, 2 touchdowns, then he's a guy to continue to keep on our radar. I still think we're not quite, you know, we're not totally doing it in terms of price on him. Philly's not playing this week, so it's not something you have to worry about for this week. But keep an eye on his price going forward. There's a chance that in a better matchup, he winds up being a value and certainly a high upside play going forward. Julio Jones, you know, it's good to see him have another good yardage game and another good target game. Maybe he continues to creep around the conversation of safe-ish wide receivers on big price tags. I imagine you'll probably see him with a pretty high prop, assuming this leg injury doesn't prevent him from practicing fully or playing next weekend. But I assume that he'll be right there towards the top. We had some really, really low wide receiver and running back props going into this week, and I think Jones will kind of creep back up towards Brown in terms of the overall yardage. I don't think you play him over Brown. I mean, they're two totally different prices, so that's not really the consideration. But yeah, I was generally pretty enthusiastic to see him just turn out one of the better yardage performances on the week. But other than that, I mean, I'm not really, not a lot jumping off the page. You know, unfortunately, there were a lot of so many unusual game scripts that it's hard for me to really sink my teeth into one performance over another.
Yeah, that was really it. It was when I was looking back and kind of just running through an audit of what kind of happened in the game and what the takeaways were. There was 10 teams that there was no takeaways, right? The game was so far over by the time they reached the fourth quarter that it's very difficult to make any really sound judgments about things like that, just because it's not it's not how the game's going to play out 90% of the time these things are run. All right, dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com. For short, head on over to the site, grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. We'll be back again on tomorrow talking about cash game plays for FanDuel and DraftKings as we try to suss out some of the value going to this week. And then we'll be back again Friday to do a game-by-game breakdown for anything we miss in the cash games. Buddy, talk to you in a second when we talk a little bit basketball.
See you later, alligator.